for some football.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Welcome to the FTN DataCast, the fantasy football podcast where data drives the discussion. Here are your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Tyler Lochner.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the FTN DataCast presented by the FTN Network. Adam Pfeiffer here on a Tuesday. I don't even know what day it is. July 19th, 2022. No clue what day it is. I'm all over the place, but happy to be on. We're going to go through some ADP debates here, looking at some ADP over on Underdog. And to do that, I have a legend on. I have Bob Harris. Bob, we haven't talked on a pod in a while, but we've done plenty of work in the past. Bob is the senior editor at Football Diehards, host on Sirius XM Fantasy, FSWA Hall of Famer, great guy, great man, legend. Bob, I'm going to keep buttering you up until you tell me to stop. So
old. You forgot the old.
No.
Great to be on with you again, Adam. It's been, I feel like I've kind of been around since the beginning of you.
Yep.
And just cannot tell you how impressed I've been with the way you've progressed and matured in this business, and the work you're doing now is phenomenal.
Well, yeah, I appreciate it. We talk all the time, and you've definitely been, you know, one of the most helpful people for me. So anytime I can do any sort of work with you, it is a blast. But Bob, yeah, busy time as always, for pretty much all of us, but especially you, right? You got magazines coming out. You're on Sirius XM. And we talked before we turned the mics on, but like, especially this offseason where it's like, oh, you finished wrapping up a show or you're in the middle of a show and Davante Adams is traded, Tyreek Hill's traded, Russell Wilson's traded, half the league is traded. So how's the quote-unquote offseason been? And I use quote-unquote been for you.
It's been hilarious, right? Like, I mean, there was a point there where things were happening such rapid-fire succession, and I can remember saying at one point, boy, remember that 5 minutes when Calvin Ridley being indefinitely suspended was the biggest story of the year?
Right.
Because that's kind of just how it went, right? It just everything was topping the last thing, and some of this movement has been unprecedented, and we also had a pretty good churn at the head coaching positions and some GM spots as well. So there's been it's been as interesting an offseason as I can remember. I know my friend Elliot Harrison, used to be with the NFL Network, is, you know, kind of widely viewed as a pretty solid historian of the NFL. And in his opinion, this has been the wildest ever in the history of the game. And I'm not going to argue. It's definitely the wildest in the 30 years I've been covering it.
Yeah, I remember because I do, you know, I'm a psychopath, so I do basketball, I do football. I was in the middle of doing a basketball podcast, and I had my phone not at my desk, and I finished wrapping up the podcast, go to grab my phone, and see Davante Adams is traded, and I'm like, oh, okay, like what is happening here? So it's a crazy offseason, and you know. There's still some players out there, right? Like Julio Jones is still out there. Will Fuller is still out there. So
yep.
Odell Beckham's still out there. The Baker Mayfield trade happened, a week ago? So it's like, it's not even.
And Devonta Freeman. You're leaving off Devonta Freeman.
Oh, well, he is. Okay. I mean, the Ravens might need him. I mean, who knows with what we're seeing out of Baltimore now. So, but I'm excited to do this podcast because, you know, Underdog's been, you know, most of the drafts I feel like that are happening. I know Scott Fishbowl is happening and that's been a blast as it always is, but a lot of the drafts you're seeing in the offseason are over on Underdog, and the ADP is always interesting on Underdog because the ADP you're going to see on Underdog, and I stress this a lot, it's going to be a lot different than it is in your traditional 12-team home draft because a huge part of Underdog is stacking. And we're seeing a lot of interesting ADPs, so I wanted to go through some, you know, some players going right around each other in ADP and kind of see who you prefer, a couple players from each position. So let's start with quarterback, Bob. You got over on Underdog, Kyler Murray and Jalen Hurts going right next to each other. Kyler Murray as the quarterback 5, right around 60th overall. Jalen Hurts, quarterback 6 at around 63rd. Who do you prefer? Obviously, interesting scenarios for both players this offseason, right? Jalen Hurts adds A.J. Brown, and for at least the first 6 weeks, Kyler Murray will not have DeAndre Hopkins, although we did have Marquise Brown join. So who do you prefer out of that duo at quarterback?
I have Murray at 5 and Hurts at 7. I'm a little higher on Hurts than some people, not as high as my co-host on Sirius, Mike Dempsey, who would have him at 4 ahead of Murray as well. Look, I get the concerns about Murray. You know, he's a little more of a, for me, it's a little more of an established player. And look, anyone you're interested in within this tier, I can make an argument for or against, right? Either player. So since I'm slightly leaning towards Murray, I mean, and maybe the difference is when you can get them in the draft, right? Maybe Maybe that's what makes Hurts more appealing, is you can get him a little bit later, depending on who you're drafting with. But I mean, to me, Murray's a little more established of an option. You know, he's got some rushing equity, although that's been diminishing. But man, through three seasons, got a 67% completion rate, 11,490 yards, 70 touchdowns, 34 interceptions, 1,786 rushing yards with 20 TDs. I mean, there's a lot to like there. The things to not like, obviously, are DeAndre Hopkins being gone for six games. but, you know, you wonder how big of a hit that is. We saw last year he was out with a knee injury. And Marquise Brown comes in. Maybe he can help close that gap a little bit while Hopkins is gone. I suspect he will. But the bigger concern to me is, and by the way, the numbers, the Cardinals average 30 points in 10 games with Hopkins and 19 points a game without him. So Brown has some work to do there, right? But the bigger concern for me is I'm not sure Cliff Kingsbury is not the doorstop here, right? I mean, it's just, you see these late season collapses for
you're
the Cardinals.
You're not a fan of field goals on fourth and goal from the one?
Right. So, and also just the predictability of this offense. I mean, everyone lines up in the same spot. It doesn't seem to be especially creative.
I can't stand it.
Right. And so, you know, maybe he will learn some lessons and make some adjustments. I thought that last year, after the previous year's late season collapse, that maybe last year was the year we were going to see, you know, DeAndre Hopkins lining up in more than one spot. All right. So, and it didn't happen. So hopefully, you know, he's learned some things and he'll be a little bit more creative. I mean, I honestly think his job is on the line this year. I think he probably came closer to getting fired last year than a lot of us might realize. It sounds like the owner, Michael Bidwell, was not happy with that outcome. And from what I hear from people who cover the team daily, that Bidwell is not a patient man and he's not going to suffer this kind of thing for very long. So we'll see. So maybe he's learned his lesson. Those are the concerns for Murray. But, you know, one other thing working in his favor, my buddy Casey Joyner, the football scientist, who I pay a lot of attention to because he's, well, a scientist. I believe in science. Okay, he might not actually be a scientist, but he digs pretty deep into stuff. He has a metric. He's created all kinds of metrics, but he does have one called shootout. Potential shootout points. And there are a number of games that the Cardinals have that have that shootout potential. It puts them in line, you know, to be a high scoring player. Jalen Hurts, I mean, I think the only knock against him is he's not entirely proven, right? I mean, he's been great with his legs, 784 yards, 10 touchdowns, and he does just enough with his arm, right? He's got 16 touchdowns, 9 interceptions last year. So, you know, the questions about the arm strength are there, but they've clearly trying to move away from the run only model that they leaned on last year. And I'm only being slightly, hyperbolic there. I mean, so, you know, they started out the season trying to be more balanced. It wasn't working out. They went to the run heavy. That seemed to work better for them, but you don't bring in AJ Brown and pay him what they're paying him to not throw the football. I think the playmaking ability helps. So not against drafting Jalen Hurts, especially because you see him, you know, on the average going a little later, I believe. I haven't checked. I should probably check ADP before I put my foot in my mouth like that. As I often do put my foot in my mouth.
I mean, a lot of drafts, Hurts goes ahead of Murray.
Yeah, I've seen it, but I've also seen it the other way around. I'm just going to check the latest NFFC. We've got Murray. So they're very close, 6 and 7. It's Murray's quarterback 6. Murray's quarterback 6. Hurts quarterback 7. 69th and 74th overall. So, you know, it's not a huge gap in value. So it's not like you're getting a tremendous discount. I think Hurts has been rising, obviously. So, like the flavor you like, I wouldn't argue you out of. If I'm gaining a little bit of something with that earlier pick that I see, you know, one of the things I do drafting quarterbacks, Adam, is I look at the other positions, and if there's nobody there that I love, nobody there that I think is a league winner or whatever, you know, that's a must-have player, if I like the values a little later better, I'll go ahead and pivot the quarterback. So maybe that's the determining factor of whether I get Murray or Hurts as well. I think, you know, having them both in the same tier is right where I'm at, and that seems like those ADPs seem fairly reasonable.
Yeah, I'm leaning Jalen Hurts. The point you brought up about Kyler, not even Kyler, but Cliff Kingsbury is definitely what I was going to touch on. Like, I know we talked about how Hopkins isn't going to be there for the first six games, but like they don't move him. Like he plays on the left side of the formation like 70% of the time, which really limits the upside because you don't have your, like we've seen so many offenses. You move your best receiver around. Cooper Kupp plays everywhere, plays in the backfield. Justin Jefferson plays everywhere. Like, I don't understand why they haven't done that with Hopkins. And, like, Hopkins last year was, for the first time in his career, touchdown dependent to an extent, right? Like, his touchdowns were really saving him. And not having him in the red zone for the first 6 weeks kind of worries me about Kyler. Maybe Kyler runs more in the red zone, and which he can clearly do. I think he had 3 rushing touchdowns the first 3 games of the season last season and then kind of fell off. But last season, the splits without Hopkins were not great. 15.5 fantasy points per game. Passing yards per game dropped from 278 to 227. And the passing touchdowns dropped from 1.9 per game with Hopkins to just 1 without him. Now, of course, they didn't have Marquise Brown as well. You know, Christian Kirk had a solid season, but for me, the addition of A.J. Brown, and I think the Eagles are going to be in between in terms of pass run rate where they were, right? They're not going to be as pass heavy as they were right to start the season and nowhere near as run heavy as they were the second half. So it's close. There's a reason it's this close. I agree that it's this close and they're both really good. And we know, like, Kyler with Hopkins and when Kyler is playing at his best can be the best fantasy quarterback in the league. Like, I don't think that's a stretch by any means.
Yeah, I don't think it is either. And that's part of it. You know, for me, Murray's going to have to go back to running the ball a little more. And that seems to be something.
And he did a little bit. Remember he had that injury at the Green Bay game? Missed 3 games. And before that game, he wasn't running as much. And we're like, why is the rushing gone? And then he came back the Bears game. Remember, it was a bad weather game against the Bears. And he ran again. He had like 70 yards. And the rushing was a lot better down the stretch of the season, which was great. I also, like, I love the Hollywood Brown addition. They obviously have a rapport playing college together, but, like, Kyler Murray was the best deep passer in the NFL last season. And for a lot of it, like, A.J. Green was their primary deep receiver last season. Like, Hollywood Brown is a much better deep receiver, especially at this point of their careers, than A.J. Green. So that's also a nice addition. And, like, let's talk about the weeks that Hopkins is back. You're going to have Hopkins, Marquise Brown, James Conner out of the backfield, and Zach Ertz. Like, and you still have whatever, like, the additions they make, improvements with Rondale Moore's role, which, again, another reason why I'm not high on Cliff Kingsbury, the way they used Rondale Moore last season, with his negative 1 yards before the catch per reception. But that's for another topic. But
You know, it still seems a little gadgety to me, right? I mean, I need to see more from that guy. But there is not a bigger James Conner stan on the planet than I. I am the engineer of that train. You can be my conductor, but I'm driving this train on Conner. And I think, you know, he'll be a factor maybe in a receiving game. But just having that, you know, having a strong rushing attack will be very helpful for Murray, I think, as well. And maybe the offensive line will be able to put something a little together this year as well.
Let's go to some quarterbacks closer to the maybe like 8 to 12 range. Matt Stafford coming off a Super Bowl victory, and Dak Prescott currently on Underdog. Stafford going right after Dak at pick 70 or 94th, quarterback 12, Dak at quarterback 11, 86.3. It's interesting, right? Like, Dak has pretty much had a down offseason, like the entire Cowboys roster. You lose Amari Cooper, you lose Cedric Wilson. Gallup's probably going to miss the first handful of games. But then we get the report that he's going to run more. And if obviously coming off that awful injury 2 years ago, last season, he was so hesitant to run. There was plays where, like, the defense had everybody covered on 3rd and 6, and Dak would hesitate to run. He could easily get 7 yards in a first down, but he would hesitate and get tackled, like, a yard or 2 short, and then have to punt. But if he's more comfortable running, remember there was a stretch where Dak was getting, like, 6 rushing touchdowns every season. So who do you like between Dak and Stafford?
So I just on the point on Dak, I've asked every beat writer that I've talked to that covers the Cowboys if it's not unreasonable to believe a full year plus removed from that ankle injury, if we'll see him run more. They all think that's going to be the case.
That's massive for me.
Right. And I like that as well. My concern is a little bit, you know, I mean, there still seem to be some issues with accuracy. You know, you look at the 69.3 passer rating and their loss to the Niners. That was his fourth lowest passer rating at home in his career. And after the fast start, you know, there was a lot of inaccuracy and some tentative play. And, I don't know. Maybe it was the injury, you know, just still, you know, coming off. And there were the injuries over the offseason as well that he dealt with, and he had the calf problem. So, you know, I don't want to put it all on him, but I need to see a little more from him. I saw a lot from Stafford last year. Mostly I saw a scheme that's just perfectly suited to him, a great supporting cast. We'll see if the offensive line holds up as well. But even if it doesn't, I mean, it's, you know.
How do they keep getting away with it, Bob? How do the Rams keep getting away with it?
We say F them draft picks, F that cap. But there is
just
no
just win
cap,
a Super Bowl, and you know what? We'll bring in Allen Robinson. We'll bring in Bobby Wagner. We'll pay Cooper Kupp. We'll pay Aaron Donald, who was actually like legitimately mulling retirement. And they're like, you know what? Here's your money. Go play for another handful of years. Win us another Super Bowl. It's ridiculous.
Right. So Stafford comes away holding the franchise record for passing yards. He tied Kurt Warner's franchise record with the 41 touchdowns, although 17 games. The passing yards, the third most in the NFL. Passing touchdowns, second. A lot of this was, you know, based on a once-in-a-lifetime season for Cooper Kupp. I like to remind people there's a reason they call it a once-in-a-lifetime season, because it's not going to happen again. Right. But like, even, you know, looking at Cooper Kupp's numbers, if he regresses, what, 20%, he's still the best receiver in fantasy last year. So, and, you know, and the same, if there's some regression for, Matt Stafford, it would not surprise me. Right. And also Allen Robinson, I don't know if the regression is totally guaranteed. I think Robinson can still be, I think Allen Robinson that we know and love as fantasy manager still exists. He did not last year, but, you know, there were a lot of reasons behind that. Injuries, COVID, bouts with COVID, and, you know, people rebound from that differently, right? So I'm not going to sit here and totally judge him. Horrible quarterback play. He's overcome that in the past. He won't have to overcome that, hopefully, this year.
Yeah, dude, Allen Robinson's, like, one of my favorite players at draft. Like, I understand he's older, but, like, how long have we been waiting for Allen Robinson? He does it every year with Bortles and whoever, you know, Trubisky, Foles. We've been saying this for years, and now he has a legitimate, like, top 10 quarterback, one of the best quarterbacks in football, and there's a lot of people that just aren't interested. Like, you've been waiting for this. Like, why are you out now? Like, I understand last year was a wash for me. The Bears' offensive system was a joke. I think Robinson at one point was like, I'm just over this. And right, not to mention
offensive line. I mean, it was like they weren't even trying.
And they
right?
didn't even play Justin Fields with the starters in right. the preseason, so they had no opportunity to mesh with Justin Fields. Like, yeah, Allen Robinson to me, like, I'm a huge Robert Woods fan, but I think at worst for the Rams, it's a wash going from Woods to Robinson. I think that's at worst. I think Robinson's probably has better, like, you know, ball skills as a receiver. Woods probably fits their offense better because of his blocking and his ability to run on jet sweeps and stuff. But
absolutely.
Yeah, I'm all in on Robinson. This is tough for me because Stafford was like 0.2 points ahead of Prescott was like 0.2 points ahead of Stafford in points per game last season. So, like, if he is back to run, not that Dak's going to run for 500, 600 yards and 8 touchdowns, but, like, if he can get up to 300, 400 and just be more comfortable running, whereas Stafford is going to give you nothing with mobility, that might be enough for me to kind of balance out the fact that, you know, he's probably going to go into week one with his top three pass catchers as CeeDee Lamb, Schultz, and maybe even Tony Pollard if they play him in the slot. It'll be Pollard or Jalen Tolbert as a number three. But, like, that could be enough for me if he's running more. To kind of balance that out, it's very close for me though.
So I mean, again, looking at the latest NFFC from the last week, I think it is 717. You know, looking at the numbers there, and thanks to my friend Dennis Roy for sending me these from the doghouse. But the it's so close. It's 88th overall for Prescott right now in the NFFC, where people have money on the line. So I like to look at this one. It's right. ADP and 96th for Stafford. Stafford's up from 100 the week before, Dak down from 84th. So the gap is closing between the two. I might be partially, to blame for that because I tend to take Stafford a little more, just because I like all the pieces. And what you said about Dak is true. I think there's going to be more running. Also, some concerns, at least to start the season, about the weapons around him. I mean, I'm all excited about Jalen Tolbert and I think Dalton Schultz is going to be dandy. But, you know, I don't know if, you know, with both Gallup and Cooper out of the picture, Gallup at least for a few games. If it's going to be a fast start, we'll see.
Let's go to the running back position. And look, I like the rise for Saquon Barkley the last like month has been ridiculous.
Crazy.
He was like he was like in the mid third. And now he's like I've done drafts where I'm like, you know what? I don't want to miss out on Saquon Barkley. I'll take him at the turn. And he's going right around Aaron Jones now in drafts. Jones is going right before Barkley at 17.3. RB9, Barkley's at RB10, 18.1. I'll let you go first, but I'm doing this coaching coordinator series at FTN Fantasy where and as you'd probably expect, Bob, knowing me for as long as you have, I'm a huge Brian Daboll guy. And look, we talk about upgrades.
You're a Buffalo guy.
Of course. but in all seriousness, like, we talk about upgrades, right? Like, this quarterback got this receiver as an upgrade. This running back got this offensive line additions as an upgrade. I think maybe the best upgrade for an NFL team this year has been the coaching for the Giants. Going from Joe Judge and Jason Garrett to Brian Daboll and Mike Kafka is going to be massive. So I'm on Saquon Barkley.
Some of the least creative offensive minds in the NFL to one of the most creative offensive
Zero
minds
pre-snap motion to a coach that loves pre-snap motion. Like, and the thing I love about Daboll, and I talk about this all the time, he does not care about having balance. Like, there was, I always bring this up, and I mentioned in my article, there was a game 2 years ago where they played Seattle. Seattle going into the game was like, they were a pass funnel. Their pass defense is terrible. Their run defense is really good. The Bills, clearly the past handful of years, have been a team that's going to destroy you through the air. And Brian Daboll, like, he threw the ball the whole game. Like, they were up by 2 touchdowns in the second half, and he kept throwing. And Pete Carroll after the game was like, I was surprised they kept throwing the football. And Brian Daboll was like, if what we're doing is working, I'm not going to stop. So, like, if, like, I just love the additions they made on the offensive line, too. And Barkley's injury last year was totally fluky. It's tough because Aaron Jones could catch 80 passes, but so could Barkley, and he has zero competition for carries. So, what do you think about Barkley? Because I have to like stop moving him up because it's getting to a point where it's almost ridiculous.
So I've been like just the ADP rocket strapped to his ass. He's just flying, and we've seen this before with guys, right? Like like Clyde Edwards-Helaire is his rookie season just out all of a sudden, you know,
first rounder.
Yeah, went cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs there. So I'm trying to keep it civil, but everything you said is true. We're going from a horrible offense, and last year, when he was healthy, he was getting true feature back, you know, treatment, yeah, right?
Only after week one, and they said they were going to ease him in week one. And then after that, it was like massive workload, which we want.
Right, and so I'm pretty optimistic that Brian Daboll is going to be smart enough to realize where the strengths of this offense lie, right? But the question for me more for Barkley is, you know, is he been the guy? He just doesn't look like the same guy he was as a rookie, right? And I'm not saying the injuries have taken a toll, but he just 3 carries of 20 plus yards last year, just 9 of 10 plus yards.
I know
offensive
why.
Line was an issue. Well, sure, offensive line was an issue, but he doesn't look like the same explosive player we saw. And so you can tell me why that is, and I'll happily hear you out.
So, like, last year's injury was obviously a fluke, but he obviously has had some major injuries prior to that, right? The ACL and everything. You talked about it, how little creativity this Giants offense has had. They just have been running Saquon Barkley up the middle between the tackles. And like, that's not his game. Like Barkley at Penn State, he bounced runs to the outside and he had long runs and he hasn't been able to do that. So you look at last season, Barkley saw stack boxes on about 28% of his carries. And then between that and the fact that the offensive line was bad, he got stuffed at or behind the line of scrimmage on 51% of his rushing attempts. It's the 8th highest rate among all running backs. Like, this season, with Daboll, what have the Bills done as much as any team in the NFL the last couple of years? 3 and 4 wide sets. And what that's going to do is, not going to be able to stack the box, you're going to have more defensive backs on defense, and you're going to see less stack boxes because you have more receivers out there. And I think that's going to be the case. Look at Mike Kafka, who's the offensive coordinator, who's with the Chiefs. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 13.8% of carries last season, saw stack boxes. It was the 8th lowest rate in the league. He was the 8th lowest. Singletary was bottom 10 in stack boxes in Buffalo because those teams are more creative with their offensive schemes. So I think Barkley's going to see way less stack boxes. Daboll's going to use him more on, you know, creative ways out on the outside, getting him to the edge. And then obviously in the passing game, he's going to use him a lot too. I think Brian Daboll is just so excited to use Barkley and another player I love, Kadarius Toney, in really creative ways, whereas that just wasn't the case with Jason Garrett and company. So I'm all in on Barkley, but it's close because Aaron Jones, I mean, you know the splits without Devontae Adams, but does A.J. Dillon siphon away the goal line work? Because down the stretch, A.J. Dillon was the goal line back when both players were healthy from weeks 15 to 18.
So allow me to counter. I will go for it. No, so there have been times though where Devontae Adams was the de facto goal line back there, right? I mean, yes. He was the weapon of choice in the red zone, at least, if not at, you know, inside the 5 in the red zone. And I wonder, you know, and I know Alan Lazard got some pretty good run with end zone targets last year. It was a surprising number when I went back and looked at it.
He had more than Adams.
Right, right. So I was a little surprised by that, but you know, maybe not totally, but you know, what is going to work? And I do think Lazard is an overlooked commodity this year. I think people should, you know, maybe one of those guys that you're getting late enough that he'll be a league winner if he plays at a wide receiver one level, you know, or a potential helpful piece in winning the league. But thinking Aaron Jones might be, you know, a guy who can help, you know, cover for that hole in the red zone offense, you know, as a trusted target for Aaron Rodgers. I think that's the argument for him, right? The receiving equity and the possibility that he takes on some of that role. Look, I mean, he's been one of the most explosive backs in the NFL, has what, last year, what was it, 800 yards, 171 carries, four touchdowns, 15 games. I mean, added six more scores on 52 catches. I mean, that's where the value to me for Jones is he's going to be splitting. And I know talking to people on the ground, it's not hard to find people who think AJ Dillon is going to actually be busier as a ball carrier this year. And that wouldn't shock me either. I'd probably have more shares of him because he's a cheaper thing. And you know, Adam, I'm a cheapskate. I like cheap things. But I'm totally not against Jones. And given the rise of Barkley's rise, if I'm going to look at current ADP, just so I'm not talking out my rear end here. I don't think it's crazy to say, where is Barkley up to? And Barkley is up to a ridiculous point. Yeah, he's like running back 9 right now in the NFFC. I mean, 15th overall. Aaron Jones is 11th. He's going 18th overall. Not a huge difference. So probably which one of these guys you get. I'm probably not buying Barkley at this price point, though. I'm either going running back earlier and then focused on wide receiver tight end in round 2 and missing out on him and maybe catching Jones if he lasts a little later, but probably not. So I'm probably missing out on both these guys. Unless I go wide receiver, tight end, first round, which does happen. Look, so I say this, you know, and people out there listening going, well, in my league, I only have one of those, right? Well, I'm drafting and, you know, I'll be in triple digit best balls by the time the season starts. So I'm able to, you know, experiment and, you know, kind of moderate my shares. If I have too much of one player, I can, you know, dial back and, you know, kind of manage the shares there a little bit. But if you're drafting in one draft, I'm probably never going to get either of these guys. They're just not going in a spot where I'm tending to draft running backs if it's like the league that matters to me. So there's that. And Barkley to me is way too high. I'd probably rather have Jones.
Yeah, it's fair. And the thing I love about Aaron Jones is, like, obviously his splits, I think it's been like 7 games without Davante Adams. He's averaging like 7 targets a game, like 20 PPR points. But the thing with his usage in the passing game, which I love, it's not like he's just getting checkdowns and dump offs. He's running legitimate vertical routes and lining up out wide because that's a huge strength in his game. So there's a reason I chose a lot of the players I did is because they are so close and you can make a case for either player. But I'm so enamored with the upside with Barkley and an offense that actually is creative. They add Evan Neal in the offseason. They add John Feliciano, which was one of the 7,000 former Buffalo Bills that the Giants added this offseason. So I'm going to lean Barkley, but I would love to have either player on my team. I think they both can be, you know, top 7 players easily. Speaking of top 7, Ezekiel Elliott's pretty much been in the top 7 for his entire career.
Why do we hate him, Adam? I don't know.
I'm glad you brought that up because weeks 1 through 4 before he had the MCL injury, Zeke was Zeke. He was like top 5 in fantasy points per game, yards per carry, yards after contact per carry, broken tackle. Like, he was Zeke. He had the one game where he didn't get the ball against Tampa Bay because, duh, you don't run against Tampa Bay. And then he was good. And then he got hurt. Now, clearly, Tony Pollard is exciting, and Tony Pollard is more explosive than Zeke at this point of the career. But I'm in on Zeke. The question is, Zeke or Breece Hall? I think it's actually Rappaport reported before we got on the pod that is about to sign his rookie contract. That's good. I actually just wrote up about Breece Hall with the Jets article, so I'll talk about him. But for me, like, they're going right after the right next to each other in drafts. I'm comfortably preferring Zeke still. I get Tony Pollard's exciting. Here's the thing with Tony Pollard, too, that drives me insane. People mention Tony Pollard like, oh, yeah, Tony Pollard's ripping off six yards a carry every game. Because he's getting Tony Pollard's good, of course, but it's easier to do that, and it's easier to look at his yards per carry to Zeke's and say it's better because Zeke's getting a handful of carries on 3rd and 1 up the middle for a yard, and he's getting more carries between tackles, where Pollard's getting 8 carries a game, and a lot of them are coming, you know, in space. So, of course, he's going to have a better yards per carry, but, yeah, it sounds like you agree with me that Zeke is still, for some reason, undervalued. Like, he's going to be 26, I think, in July. Like, he's not ancient.
No, so, and also he's making so much money that he's not, you know, I mean, honestly, it makes no sense not to use him. Also, Tony Pollard's been there a little while. It's not like he is cut heavily into, you know, any more heavily than, I mean, if they wanted him to cut into the workload, he already would have done it, right? He doesn't tend to cut into the workload.
He didn't do it in a year where Zeke clearly shouldn't have even been playing.
Right.
So if Zeke's fully healthy, he's not going to do it.
Right. And that's the thing. And so, you know, I get the concerns on Zeke and you know, when you look back on it, I mean, the numbers in general are not phenomenal, right? I mean, you know, they're not Zeke level numbers. It was 4.2 yards a carry or about 58.9 yards per game and 4.2 yards per carry. Those are career lows. Looking at this, the 4.2 yards carry was the third lowest mark of his career. So, I mean, those numbers are bad, but also, I mean, he played, he was only one of three top 16 running backs to play in every game. He, Jonathan Taylor, and Najee Harris were the only running backs to start all 17 games. So,
people view that as a negative on him too. Like, oh, he only does it because he doesn't miss games. Like, I like when players on my fantasy team play every game. I enjoy that.
There's a great floor there, right? And it, again, we're talking about a running back too for your fantasy purposes either way. And the price has been rising on him. I was loving it when I could get him in the fourth round.
Oh, I was earlier this offseason. Yeah, it was so easy, dude. You just go receiver heavy on best ball drafts, and you need your starting running back. Oh, Zeke's in the middle of the fourth round. Okay,
exactly, and that's changing, and that's fine. I mean, I have enough shares of him at those cheaper prices. But also, depending on how I'm constructing my roster, I'm still it's not unusual to see him in the third round. Still, and that kind of works for me depending on where I'm drafting, if I can land him there. So I'm quite happy to have him there. Hall is growing on me, and with the price rising on Zeke and Hall both, I mean, I get it, but there's a lot to like about Hall, including 41 rushing touchdowns over 2020 and 2021. Had at least one touchdown in 24 straight games, so doesn't always play up to his speed, but he's been super reliable. Just no fumbles. 800 offensive touches over the last three seasons and 591 over the last two, and didn't fumble the ball during his time in college. And also, people are going to say that mileage. Oh, all that mileage in college. You know who thinks that's a load of caca? That would be Jonathan Taylor, who I talked to coming out.
21, like.
Right. I talked to Jonathan Taylor, and he's just going, we asked him about that coming out of college, heading into his rookie season, about the workload he had in college. He said, look, man, that's what I do. I never missed a practice. I mean, everyone who thinks it's a negative that I've carried the ball a lot is out of their mind. This is my job. This is what I do. And we've seen this kind of borne out at the NFL level. I think Hall seems to me in a similar vein. You shouldn't be worried about mileage or any of those things. This is what he's built to do. If you're Michael Carter dynasty manager, I apologize. I am also, clearly I thought he looked pretty good, Michael Carter, by the way, last year.
He was very impressive. He was top 12 in missed tackles forced. His contact balance is really, he was good. They like him there too.
He's one of those guys, right? And going back to college, I mean, when he played with Javonte Williams, he still had, I want to say he led the league, led the nation in, breakaway runs of 20 yards or more. So,
he reminds me, not to the extent he's not as good, obviously, but in terms of his contact balance, he reminds me of Alvin Kamara a little bit.
So
it's impressive.
But this offense, Zach Wilson's newfound super energy notwithstanding, they'd be wise to run the ball a hell of a lot, right? So, they're adding weapons around him, and Wilson's progress is going to be a major factor in determining how this offense goes going forward. Clearly, the goal here, though, has been to put pieces around Zach Wilson to make him a success, which has not happened for Jets quarterbacks. You'll be surprised to learn, Adam Pfeiffer, for quite some time.
I know. Until a certain quarterback out of Wyoming, I've known the feeling.
Right. So I'm kind of on board on both these guys. Again, I find myself recently getting more Hall because he's been the cheaper piece. But I'm not against drafting either of these guys. And depending on where you're drafting and how you're building your roster, as you've said, you can make pretty strong cases for both. As it stands right now, if you're going to, if I have to die on a hill, it's going to be the Zeke hill. Just better team, great defense, a lot of things to like about the Dallas Cowboys, even if you're not a Dallas Cowboys fan. And I hate all 32 teams equally. Before anyone thinks I'm liking anybody, I don't. Don't like any of them. But the Jets, need to see a little bit more from the team in general. I think, if you're down to splitting hairs in your fantasy draft, and one of those hairs is, okay, I like both these guys an awful lot. One of them plays on a really good team and one of them doesn't. Sometimes the guy who plays on a really good team is probably a good choice.
Yeah, and I do like the fit for Breece Hall. Like, we know with Mike LaFleur, they're going to run that wide zone running scheme that everybody is seen that's been from San Francisco. They implement that to their offense. And Breece Hall last year in college, just over 69% of his carries came out of zone running scheme. So it's a good fit. The talent's there. The offensive, the Jets, I tweeted this out the other day, but the Jets are probably going to have one of the five best zone blocking offensive lines in football. McGovern was really good in that role. And they bring in Tomlinson from San Francisco, who I would say he probably knows the scheme pretty well. I think they're going to be really good. But yeah, I lean Zeke as well. But similarly to how we mentioned Zeke, like as a earlier in the offseason, it's like you go receiver, receiver, tight end, receiver, 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 and you can get Zeke in round four as your RB1. You can do the same thing with Breece Hall as your RB1, and you might get off to a slow start because rookie running backs tend to, you know, get eased in a little bit. But like Breece Hall could be a top 10 running back second half of the season easily. So I do like getting Breece Hall on builds where I go zero RB as well. All right, let's go to wide receiver. This is an interesting one because I love both these receivers so much. And one of them has been talked about a lot more recently after the trade of Baker Mayfield. And that's DJ Moore against Michael Pittman, who, man, like again, you'd be struggling to find a team I've drafted this offseason where I don't have at least one of these receivers. Michael Pittman currently going as wide receiver 14, DJ Moore wide receiver 15. Bob, does the Baker Mayfield trade do anything for you with DJ Moore? Did you already have him ahead of Pittman? Because this is an interesting one. They're both supremely talented young receivers. I tweeted it out the other day. I love advanced stats. I simply tweeted because it kind of surprised me, but DJ Moore is 25. I feel like he's like 29, 28, but nope, he's 25.
Right. So I break these guys consecutively, and I've gone back and forth. They're 15 and 16 right now. Pittman went ahead, Moore one behind. I have been considering the change to Baker. I don't know if that really makes a huge change. You know, for me, DJ Moore is a guy that we'd be having. He's like Kyle Pittman's rookie year, except it extended over a few years. If we were sitting here, you know, having a conversation about a guy who has scored double-digit touchdowns every year, I mean, what would we be saying about DJ Moore? Or even just more than he has, right?
Yeah, if he scores seven touchdowns, he's an easy top 10, maybe even higher receiver. He's just,
exactly.
He's been top 10 receiving yards the last three seasons, 1,100 every year. Like, it's just been, he hasn't gotten past four touchdowns.
Well, think about this. That 1,100 yards, each of the last three seasons, he's one of only two players in the NFL to do that. Your guy, Stephon Diggs, is the other, right? That's pretty impressive. He also has the longest active streak of consecutive seasons with 1,200 yards from scrimmage among wide receivers, with three, Devontae Adams, Diggs, Tyreek Hill, and Justin Jefferson. They have two each, right? I mean, he's in that conversation just in terms of overall production. And so, like, I like him. I mean, I like him a lot, maybe more than I should. And that's been the issue is his touchdown scoring has not been on par. He's played. He's been, you know, in that Allen Robinson, Andre Johnson, DeAndre Hopkins. You know, you want to look at the quarterback proof players over the course of our recent history, right? He probably falls into that category. He has done this despite, you know, his quarterback play instead of because of it. So maybe now he'll do it in part because of his quarterback play. We'll see what Baker Mayfield can do. I don't think it raises his ceiling notably. But I think that's the problem for me with Pittman is you wonder if we haven't seen him at his ceiling, right? I mean, like the workload was great. Entirely possible he catches more touchdowns too, right? That's the for both these guys, this is going to be what sets them apart or not. I caught 88 of 129 targets last year, 1,082 yards, six touchdowns. If he added more touchdowns, this would be great. Also, this is going to be a run heavy offense, though. It's going to continue to roll through Jonathan Taylor. They're, you know, maybe they develop some other receiving threats. I do think the target share is going to be great. I think they finished tied for the eighth highest share, 24%.
Yeah, he had, 27% of their total receptions, which was tied with like Adams and Jefferson or Adams and Kupp for the league lead. Like when they threw the ball, it was to the running backs or it was Michael Pittman pretty much.
Right. His target share was 31% from weeks 13 to 18. I mean, that was huge, right, for fantasy managers. But again, would need to be some scoring. I think it's fair to point out too, you know, I mean, I don't think Carson Wentz is horrible. I think Matt Ryan's a slight upgrade, right?
And I think Ryan is more than a slight upgrade, but like, still, like it's not like Pittman wasn't targeted with Wentz. Like,
right.
Wentz was in that YOLO, I'm throwing contested balls Michael Pittman's way and hoping for a catch or PI. And Ryan won't have the same mindset, but he's hyper targeted as number one receiver throughout his career. Of course, he's had Julio Jones as his number one receiver. Roddy White is his number one receiver, so definitely helps. But Michael Pittman. It's not like Michael Pittman's like a receiver we're hoping can be. Like, Michael Pittman's probably like a top 20 talent receiver. It's not like he's a bad receiver.
I think he is. I think where he finished last year, somewhere in that range seems reasonable, and I raised him slightly, elevated the projection slightly because of the upgraded quarterback. And, like, this is not 2016 Matt Ryan, but it doesn't need to be. I mean, this is a huge upgrade over over Philip Rivers. But I think Mike Clay made a good point. He noted that, you know, the goal line work wasn't great. He was 39th last year with 7 end zone targets, and he didn't run a lot of deep routes. His 9.6 A dot was in the bottom third of the position. So those are the concerns, and those are things that can change. Right. Also, things that can change are, you know, they can develop some other receivers, perhaps.
Yep.
Paris Campbell stays healthy and becomes something. I don't know.
I like, you know, Alec Pierce.
Right. Alec Pierce, I like a lot. And maybe as a, but kind of a red zone threat, too. So, I think both these guys are pretty fairly priced right now. It, you know, if I'm betting on the upside of one, I'm probably betting slightly on Pittman. Like the size, like the role, all those things. But, you know, you can make the same arguments for more, except, you know, except the physical aspect of it, right? But that offense in, much like the offense in Indy, these are narrow funnels, right? For fantasy purposes. It's McCaffrey and Moore in Carolina. It's Taylor and Pittman. Maybe we'll see some more Hines. Maybe some of these other associated pieces come to the fore a little more. As this offense progresses. But for right now, I think both these guys are very fairly priced. I have a slight lean to Pittman. And maybe this depends on your roster construction as well. If you're, you know, if you took a little risk, maybe you took Tyreek Hill earlier and you're worried about the volatility there or just the uncertainty with the change of teams. And maybe you want a high, super high floor player. I think DJ Moore is a perfect play for that kind of situation.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what DJ Moore's volume looks like this year with Baker and with hopefully a healthy McCaffrey. Because last year, like, there weren't five receivers with better volume. Look at all the numbers. Like at FTN Fantasy, we have this stat called first read targets, which I love. Only four players had more first read targets than DJ Moore last year. Cooper Kupp, Devontae Adams, Justin Jefferson, and Deontay Johnson. He had 35% of Carolina's first read targets, which was tied with Adams and Jefferson for the highest rate in the NFL. And like, while the touchdowns haven't been there and the overall end zone targets haven't been great, he's dominated his team's share of end zone targets. He was top five in percentage of teams' end zone targets last year. It's just they didn't get in the end zone very often because they were like bottom seven in yards, plays, and points per drive. Baker Mayfield, I think, will do a better job sustaining drives than Darnold. Darnold, you know, threw a lot of interceptions, takes a lot of bad sacks, and his career touchdown rate's like 3.3%, where Baker's is around 4.5%. So, like I said, if DJ Moore can get to 6-7 touchdowns, he's going to be a top 10 receiver pretty easily. But also, like, is that volume going to be as high with McCaffrey hopefully healthy the whole year and a new quarterback? I don't think it's going to be as high, but I think he'll still be top, you know, 7-8 in terms of target share. I think you make a good point. I don't think we've seen potentially Pittman's ceiling, but at the same time, like, if DJ Moore can get in the end zone, his ceiling hasn't been reached either. I do think Pittman has a little bit of a higher chance of not repeating his target share just because Alec Pierce is there. If Paris Campbell stays healthy, I think Nyheim Hines is going to be more involved in the passing game this year. Plus, they throw to their tight ends a lot in the red zone. They have Mo Alie-Cox. They brought in Jelani Woods. Like, they're going to throw to their tight ends up close a lot. Whereas, like, the Panthers have McCaffrey, they have DJ Moore, and they have Robbie Anderson. And maybe Terrace Marshall does something in year two. They don't throw to their tight ends ever, right? So, I have DJ Moore, I think, 12 and Pittman 13. So, I lean DJ Moore. But yeah, they're two of my favorite receivers to draft this season. Let's go to a receiver that just recently got a contract extension in Terry McLaurin. Seemed overdue, long overdue, one of the best receivers in the NFL, but similar to DJ Moore, has done what he's done through his first three seasons with pretty terrible quarterback play. He'll have Carson Wentz now, who the numbers looked okay, but I thought he was, regardless how you thought Wentz played last year, he's the best quarterback McLaurin's had. Terry McLaurin or Jalen Waddle, who, I'll preface this, Bob, I have not drafted Jalen Waddle much at all. I think he's going way too high still. But it scares me because he's so talented.
He really is. And, like, so, you know, he needs to improve in areas as well, right? So what was his problem last year? You know, as you look at his numbers and kind of break them down, wasn't his catch total. It was 104 catches. Were amazing. It wasn't the yardage total. It was the Dolphin rookie record of 1,015. It was the 9.8 yards per catch, which was tied for 109th in the NFL. Right? And that's not to say he can't be a playmaker. Just, you know, can they put him in better situations? Tyreek Hill's going to be a limiting factor on all this, right? Whether it's the catch totals, the yardage totals, the downfield looks, all these things are going to be a little bit of an issue for him. I agree with you. I just, you know, as much as I like Waddle, I think there's enough uncertainty surrounding this offense. A new scheme comes in with Mike McDaniels, as we mentioned. Tyreek Hill comes in. It's a new thing. And, you know, for all you think of Tyreek Hill as being a huge, big play, volatile threat, he's still a pretty good receiver in general, right? He's, you know, I think people kind of, you know, if you don't watch him, you don't view him as anything more than, you know, a speed, deep threat kind of guy. He's a very well-rounded receiver who can do a lot of things well. So, and may have to in Miami. And then again, you know, we're all counting on Tua Tagovailoa to make a huge leap because of the pieces around him. Also, he has to make that huge leap. We have not yet seen the huge leap. So, and based on the footage the Dolphins put out on their social media, he may never, right? So, so like I'm with you. I'm kind of out on this one. McLaurin has grown on me. You know, I kind of held the opinion, and I'm probably, you know, overstating my case here. Look, the numbers have been great. First three seasons, 3,090 yards, 16 touchdowns. First wideout to put up back-to-back 1,000 yards receiving since, what, Henry Ellard in the 90s, since I got in this business. And I think 94, I want to say, a year after I got into it. So he's done it with the uninspired quarterback play. I do think he can be really, you know, I do think he can be better than he was. I thought last year, you know, what do you have? I mean, like, there's nobody else in Washington that's going to threaten him right now. I mean, Jahan Dotson sounds like he's getting glowing reviews. Curtis Samuel, they'd like to use him as kind of their gadget type role, not necessarily as a full, you know, receiving compliment, but, you know, a rusher slash receiver. He still looks like the only game in town to me. The quarterback upgrade matters. And I kept trying to tell myself that there were times last year where I thought some of the games where he didn't show up were as much on him as it was on the quarterback play. But then I kind of went back and reviewed and I thought, that's a crappy pass.
Was so ridiculous how many times he got like legitimately 2-3 yards of separation down the field. And whoever was under center would either throw it late or throw it 50 feet in the air. And by the time the ball landed, the defensive back, not just one defensive back, but a second defensive back would be able to get back to the play. And, you know, either McLaurin would somehow still make a contested catch because he's outstanding at football
or he would get knocked away.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that,
he led the NFL in contested catches and targets, which isn't a surprise because half the time he gained separation, it ended up being a contested target still because the ball didn't get there on time.
Yeah, I think that was the thing that I, you know, upon further review, you are correct. The throws were bad. Right. And so I, you know, I kind of have come around on him and he's risen up a little bit. He's definitely well ahead of Waddle for me right now. I just can't see, you know, look, you know, maybe I catch some lightning Waddle. I'm like you. I don't have a lot of shares. I currently have McLaurin as my wide receiver 14. Waddle is my tight end 20. And even as I look at this, I'm probably moving him down another notch.
Yeah, I'm at 22nd, so.
Honestly,
his ADP has dropped. He started earlier this offseason around wide receiver 15. He's at 18 right now, but yeah, I'm still lower than ADP on him.
Yeah, I think I'm heading in that direction even as we speak. I'm adjusting my rankings as I'm talking through this, you know, and just I'll have to work on my projections a little bit. So, but I'm with you. I just don't have a lot of faith in Tua delivering to the level necessary to support both these guys. Look, we've seen teams in the past, you know, support two wide receiver one level producers. I don't think this Miami offense is one of them yet.
Let's close out the receivers with a look at two receivers going right around 25. Brandon Cooks, wide receiver 25, which is still too low, so I'm probably giving away who I'm choosing here.
It's insanely low.
And Rashad Bateman, wide receiver 26. Brandon Cooks should be inside the top 20, so I'm just going to leave it at that. He's been top 20 like each of the last four seasons. He's done it now twice in Houston. He averaged like more points per game with Davis Mills last season. He had at least a 25% target share in seven different games last season. Like, for me, this is a landslide Brandon Cooks. It shouldn't even be this close. And then there's the most polarizing player in the history of fantasy football, Gabriel Davis. I love him, obviously. There's no way I'm taking Gabriel Davis or Brandon Cooks. There's no way I'm taking Metcalf over Brandon Cooks. There's no way I'm taking Jerry Jeudy over Brandon Cooks. There's no way I'm taking Jalen Waddle over Brandon Cooks. There's no way I'm taking Hollywood Brown over Brandon Cooks. All these receivers go pretty comfortably ahead of him.
Yeah, I think that's crazy to me. I am with you on Brandon Cooks. He ranks higher for me than all the players we've talked about at wide receiver so far. So, at least the last three groups. last two groups. So, everything you said, right? I mean, it just totally makes sense. And honestly, you know, we're putting him up against Bateman, who I think I think he's going to be a breakout player. I think he's going to get his fair share of targets, but these offenses are built a little differently. Houston has a horrible offensive line. They do not have a great group of running backs. They were one of the worst rushing teams in football last year. Their defense wasn't great. Even improvements in all those things leaves them leaning heavily on the passing game. But part of this, you know, moving him up and, you know, what you said, you know, top 20, I totally agree. I mean, you know, I'm looking at the numbers since he came to the NFL. I think he's only missed 1,000 yards, what, twice, and those were kind of injury-related. One was 10 games as a rookie.
I was going to say, it was his rookie year, yeah.
Yeah, 2019 in Los Angeles when he was playing with Kupp and Woods. So, I mean, he's averaging 4.8 catches, 66.5 yards a game, 65.8% catch rate. All these things are really good. So I have a little faith in Pep Hamilton, who's taking over as offensive coordinator.
I love Pep Hamilton. I literally just posted the Texans edition of my coaching coordinator series. Listen, it's not a coincidence Davis Mills was as good as he was last year. Pep Hamilton was the quarterback's coach, and now he's the offensive coordinator. So, yeah, I love Pep
Hamilton. Don't forget Davis Mills, because here's I will let my Davis Mills fandom, which is not strong, by the way. But honestly, I think he's maybe – it's easy to forget at Stanford he only started, like 11 games?
Yeah.
He had injury issues, so he's been a work in progress. We saw that progress last year from the first group of starts to the second group of starts. We saw tremendous progress.
He had the highest passer rating on deep passes in the NFL.
Right, like, so I'm with you on Cooks 100%. I think on Bateman, like, again, you could think he's going to have a huge breakout. Where is that going to finish him up? Where is that going to place him? It doesn't place him anywhere near the top.
I was going to ask you, like, what is his ceiling for targets? Like, the Ravens aren't going to be anywhere near as pass heavy. Like, last year was the outlier because all their running backs and all their defensive backs were hurt last season.
Yeah, I think that's going to be his problem. I mean, could he hit 120? Maybe.
I mean, if he gets 120, that'd be amazing. But I
think
you're
right. I think that would be the high end. I'm like right around 100, 110. I think is a more reasonable number. And if he got like 75 catches, you'd be pretty happy with that. So I don't think he's going to hit the 90 to 100. I would expect from Brandon Cooks, that's for sure. And also, you know, again, I mean, Mark Andrews. I'm a huge Mark Andrews guy. Drafting the hell out of him. I don't think he's going to repeat last year's numbers either. By the way. I think that would be a reach thinking he's going to get that 18 points average fantasy points per game. Cause a lot of that came when the backup quarterbacks targeted him even more heavily than Lamar Jackson did. But that's the issue. I mean, you know, Andrews is the de facto wide receiver one there, no matter what, no matter who the quarterback is. And that's going to be a limiting factor for Bateman. I do like him. I think it's, you know, he was a first round pick. The Ravens like him. I'm sure there's a lot to like there. I don't think we saw all of it. Guy coming off surgery during the summer is probably going to take some time to get up to speed and maybe never get up to full speed, right? So, you know, but that's what you're buying when you buy him, and is that a little bit of uncertainty, and you're hoping to gain some level of value from the fact that he wasn't super productive and that his role isn't necessarily super productive. I mean, well, you know, again, Marquise Brown caught a lot of passes last year, so I don't want to say it's impossible for him. But I like him at his current price. You know, I don't think it's outrageous to draft him as a wide receiver 3. I think the outrageous part is that Brandon Cooks is not going higher when we're having this conversation.
Yeah, the crazy thing is I mentioned Brandon Cooks is now wide receiver 25, and that's with his ADP actually moving up. Like, it didn't move down. Like, it moved up, and it's still only at 25. So, yeah, Brandon Cooks to me is just, like, I would draft him at wide receiver 17, wide receiver 16. Let alone wide receiver 25.
I'm looking in the NFFC, you know, current ADP, and I'm looking at some of the names that are going ahead of him, which include Courtland Sutton and DK Metcalf. I'm going, okay, I get it, but
yeah,
probably not for me.
Let's close it out with a matchup of two of the best tight ends in the NFL, and this is one I've struggled with. I've gone back and forth multiple times. Darren Waller at tight end 4, George Kittle tight end 5. Darren Waller, weird season last season. Remember week 1, yep. Monday Night Football, 19 targets. It's like, oh, Darren Waller is going to have a monster season. And then it was a little bit inconsistent. Then he had the injury on Thanksgiving. We didn't really see him again. And then George Kittle, it's been when he gets targeted, he's as good as anybody in football, but he doesn't see the elite target share that we see from Kelce and Andrews and even Dalton Schultz to an extent. But like when he, on a per target basis, he's great. And we saw that 2-game stretch last year where George Kittle reminded everybody, like, when he gets the ball, he's maybe the best in the NFL. He had a 2-game stretch where he caught 22 of 27 targets for 332 yards and 3 touchdowns against Seattle and Cincinnati. So you love the player. You also don't like how good he is run blocking because that limits his route sometimes.
This is the problem. He's too good, right?
I said this the other day, he's too good.
He is too good a blocker, and that to me is a limiting factor for him. And like, look, what,
points per pancake. Said, where are you drafting him? First round?
I've seen him go. No. Say that again. First round?
In a points per pancake league.
Oh yeah, first round for sure. I mean, he's awesome. Awesome as a blocker, but I mean, we're not getting that scoring unless we're in some really great leagues. We'll have to
maybe Scott Fish in a couple years will add that.
Probably so. But like the breakout 2018 season, it relied so heavily on what you said. You know, the 1,377 receiving yards led all tight ends, career highs in targets, receptions, yards per reception. But man, since then it's just been stagnant, and I think the reason is why. The route running. Also, some pretty good receivers. It turns out Deebo Samuel can play football. I think Brandon Ayuk can still play football. but the design of this offense, George Kittle is going to be blocking an awful lot. That's why I'm still slightly leaning to Waller here. I missed 5 games last year with the injuries. That's a problem. But in 11 games he was in, you know, what was missing was the red zone looks. Maybe he doesn't get those again. Maybe Hunter Renfrow keeps stealing those. But the thing that works in his favor is with Devontae Adams there, is there won't be any wide receiver one coverage, which he drew on the regular, without a true wide receiver one there. You know, that was a limiting factor to me for Waller's. So, you know, 2020 was primarily built on touchdowns. He had the 9 that season. The catch rate was 71.6%. 2019, 74.8% catch rate. So, I mean, that fell last year and partially due to his drop rate. And that's a problem as well. He needs to clean up. But I don't think the arrival of Devontae Adams is necessarily, you know, going to be a huge limiting factor to his workload. To some degree, it is. I mean, they're going to have to throw the ball an awful lot. But if you're looking, I'm going to just check my projections here on the targets just so I'm not making things up completely out of whole grass. So what are we going to look at for targets here? I want to say, you know, so last year he was obviously limited because of the lack of action. I would say he's going to get more targets than last year. 110 targets, you know, and without the heavy coverage, I think that's not unreasonable. I think he can be pretty damn productive in that, maybe more productive than we expect with Devontae Adams there drawing the heavy coverage.
Yeah, Darren Waller saw bracket coverage so often last season, and that really opened up Hunter Renfrow. And, like, the Raiders coming off a season where they threw the ball a ton. They have Josh McDaniels there, but like they might have to throw again because that division's just loaded with shootouts. Like,
so right. I've asked again, this is the question I ask every beat writer. Is like, so if we look at the last year's numbers, that is 626 attempts for Derek Carr, is that going to be the plan this year? They all seem to think that's a pretty high number. I would love it to be that number again, but let's say it's even, you know, slightly less, but let's say 10% fewer. That would be a pretty big number, 5% fewer, something like that. I don't know. I'd like to think he'll still hit, you know, 600. But if it was 575, I think there's still enough to go around.
Yeah, at the moment, I have Waller ranked higher. But I will say there's been drafts where, like, Kittle goes, like, a full round later.
Yeah, that's been the difference.
That's when I just say, you know what, I'll take Kittle. We also have the unknown with Trey Lance, right? Like, what's... We only saw him play like 3 games with meaningful action. I think he played a half of a game and then started 2 games. And it looked like Deebo, because Deebo was mostly the offense, was the primary pass catcher. But like Brandon Ayuk wasn't involved until the second half, really. And, you know, so it's still a run first team. Whereas Waller, like I think Waller has a better chance to get more targets, but we know Kittle can be as efficient as anybody in football with the targets. And he's still always been good in terms of targets per route run.
Right.
But yeah, like I have Waller ranked higher, but if I can wait a full round and take Kittle, I would rather do that. I think if that makes sense.
I would rather do that. But right now, the current NFFC, you're not getting that right. kind of separation. They're going like, what is it? 54 and 57 overall. Waller has slightly ahead. So I'm not gaining a lot of ground. I'm probably going Waller in that case.
This has been fun, Bob. Some good debates. And again, it's middle of July right now, so ADPs are going to continue to change, especially with training camp starting and player X is running with the ones, player X is not practicing and stuff like that. So much is going to change. Tell everybody where they can and what days, I guess, they can listen to you on Sirius XM because I highly recommend it.
Every day, every weekday, Sirius XM Fantasy Sports Radio, 8 to 10 Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. And that'll probably ramp up a little bit once the season starts because I'm really greedy to be jabbering about this stuff. And also check out footballdiehards.com, all kinds of cool stuff there, including some great magazines in which Adam Pfeiffer takes part in and does a fantastic job.
yeah, it's always fun. Appreciate Bob stopping by. Make sure you follow him on the Twitter machine at Football Diehard. Always a pleasure talking with Bob. We'll be back the rest of this week. We still have to do some more team previews. We're on the NFC North right now. We have to do the Detroit Lions, who I'm actually pretty excited to talk about. And then there's the Chicago Bears, who excited to talk about. Nah. I love Justin Fields, but apparently the Bears don't want him to succeed. So that'll be the rest of the week here at the FTN DataCast, presented by the FTN Network. Appreciate Bob stopping by. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the FTN DataCast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. And follow the hosts on Twitter at APfeiffer24 and at LochnerNFL.